DW.
I had really intense swimming lessons when I was a kid because my mom, who was an athlete when she was younger, thought that she would try and shape me into being an athlete. And instead of swimming, I would go up on the diving block and just start performing, just singing songs and just like jumping from one board to the next and just performing basically in front of the whole public pool. I think it was my swimming coach who like jokingly first told my parents that I think she'd be a better singer than she'd be an athlete. That's how I probably got started in public pools diving blocks. I think my songs are always a response to what's going on around me or how I'm feeling, and I think the songs sort of act as a journal of my journey, and I can really see how it shifted over the years. But in terms of what values, I guess I will always be like, feminism comes first, equality comes first for me, and that, you know, it shows in my work.
In Indonesia, gender inequality is seen in the high rate of child marriages. 25% of girls are married before they turn 18, and most of those then leave school early. Maternal mortality rates are the highest in the region, and female genital mutilation is common. On top of that, Indonesia is now debating a law reform that would criminalise adultery and same-sex sexual acts, and that would significantly restrict the availability of information on contraception.
It didn't feel real until I quit music entirely in 2012 for about 2 years to really focus on gender issues, because I felt like I need to know what I'm talking about when I write songs about it. So I quit and I worked as a caregiver for women who are victims of violence. And it opened my eyes to a lot of how complex this issue really is, that everything is interlaced from economy to education to environment through gender, and everything is, and the deeper you are in the problem, the more harder it is to pull you out of it because of the layers and layers of injustice that you have to face. That's also around the same time that I came out to a newspaper about being a survivor of rape, which I kept to myself for 20-something years. And then I first came out in the newspaper in 2013, and then people start coming to me and telling me about their experiences, people who I've never met before. Every time after I perform or after an interview in the media or TV or something, they would pull me aside and tell me, you know, thank you for sharing your story. I have a story I want to share that I've never shared with anyone. So that's when I feel like, you know, like you have so much not just covered up, but you kind of censor yourself from telling the truth because our culture and our society kind of stigmatize women who have experienced especially sexual violence. It's also the moment where it's the turning point for me from being a victim of rape to survivor of rape, was when I came out and managed to accept the fact that this isn't my fault, that I am not alone, and that I am overcoming it together with millions of women around the world. And just that alone is very, very helpful. It's tremendously healing for me to be able to have that turning point. But also, I feel like when I speak out about it, maybe there are other women out there who have felt alone all their lives, who feels like they have a friend if, you know, somebody were to open up about it.
One third of Indonesian women experience gender-based violence in their lives. Although research shows that up to 90% of rape cases go unreported, meaning that the real rate of violence is probably much higher.
The song that got the most response, or the campaign that got the most response that I did, was Tubuhku Otoritasku, which is My Body, My Authority. And it turns out that so many women relates to it, but from different angles, different perspective, but not just Indonesian women. I've been getting correspondence from all over the world, from like Estonia, from Japan, from Finland, from the Netherlands. And I'm surprised because the song is in Bahasa, and I didn't think it would relate to people who doesn't speak the language, but I guess it's a universal sort of solidarity call.
Tika's well and truly outside the usual pop diva image that most Indonesian female stars cultivate. One commercial recording label told Tika that her body is an awkward size, saying she's too fat to be beautiful and too skinny to be marketed as a fat singer. So Tika decided to work as an independent artist. The video for Tubuhku Otoritasku shows women of all shapes, sizes, colours and background reveling in their bodies.
I think it's a baby step that the feminist movement in Indonesia sort of stepped over when we are talking about getting rid of gender-based violence. We talk policies. Of course, that's really super important. But then we talk about what is sexual violence? How do you report sexual violence? How do you deal with sexual violence if it happens to you? All of these things. But we never really talk to girls and women about having authority over their own body. Like, most girls and women still think that it is not fully their rights to have ownership over their bodies. They don't feel they can say no to their partners and husbands when they want to get intimate, or that they can dress however they want, or that they can be expressive, or they can be thin or big or tall or short. We have so many rules, so many regulations, so many judgments and scrutiny thrown at us about our body that we feel detached from it, that we feel that maybe if something were to happen to us, if we get raped or we get abused, that it's our body's fault. You know, maybe my breasts are too big, or maybe it was my skirt, or maybe it's the way I walk. You know, like, these things are so important that women internalize that this body belongs to them, so that we stand up for what's ours. We never did, you know, like, we always thought it wasn't fully ours. I have gotten some negative response. Expectedly so, coming from a country that, you know, doesn't value equality. You know, they don't see it as a necessity, or they even see it as a bad idea. And I have received threats through emails, like death threats and stuff, and then people coming into my place of business and, you know, threatening me and stuff. For the first time ever, I was speaking at a university, and there's a protest right outside where I was speaking. Just for me, I felt so flattered. They hated my song, of course. They were like putting up signs that says "Tubuhku otoritas Tuhanku," which means my body is the is my God's authority, because I'm saying my body is my authority, and they disagree with that. And yeah, that's the beauty of like freedom of expression. We can disagree on things and still be respectful about it. I thought they were respectful. They were just holding up signs, but I felt so flattered.
In the last couple of years, dozens of discussions have been shut down or cancelled in Jakarta in response to threats from religious hardliners. Events that cover sensitive aspects of Indonesia's political history, like the massacres of 1965, or that focus on the country's stigmatised LGBT population, are now often forced out of venues before they even begin. So Tika's now turning her attention to a new challenge, establishing a restaurant and community space in Jakarta, where all sorts of groups and people can find a home to talk about issues that are being forced out of public spaces. And values,
your version of the truth. Having a physical space, especially in Jakarta, to do things that we love that aren't necessarily embraced by the general public is so important right now with the law that's about to be passed and with everything, you know, like the rise of conservatism. You know you raised them
well. For DW, I'm Nicole Kirby in Sydney, Australia.
DW.